And then during the kind of winter months, I can remember we were ploughing through the snow to go to meetings in the schools in local communities to spell out the same message. With meetings in the canteens of the FE colleges during lunchtime, walking in, banging the trays on the table, standing on a chair and just speaking to people eating their dinner, and spelled out the messages there. We organised public meetings all over the place, meetings of the workforce, meetings inside the depots, and so on, including also going beyond the council workforce to private industry, the likes of Ford's and Plessy's and places like that that had big plants at the time, and organised meetings to explain the choices that people were encountering. And we did that in preparation for Budget Day in March of 1984. And the plan was to introduce what you'd call a deficit budget, a budget that had a plan of expenditure that improved people's livelihoods, froze rents, in fact, promised to cut the rents by £2 a week, froze rates at inflation level, which at that time was about 9%, and also began the programme of house building of 5,000 new council houses for rent, not for sale, for rent, with front and back gardens for every single one of them. That was the programme that we advanced. And then a deficit budget was one whereby that's your expenditure programme. The income from various forms of income, including government grant, falls short. And the shortfall is what you fight for, what you mobilise the population in a struggle for off the government. And so successful was that constant repetition of a simple message, or simple set of messages, was that I can recall school children, a primary school, I mean, been interviewed by Radio City and Radio Merseyside around Budget Day, when we'd organised a one-day general strike on the in the region in support of the council, with a march of 50 to 60, some of us thought maybe 70,000, marching to the town hall in Liverpool City Centre. And so successful was that message with its repetition that school kids at primary level were saying, well, the reason we're a campaign is because we want our 25 million. Now, that's a measure. When you get back some of your own slogans from the mouths of babes, so to speak, it's a pure indication of the success in agitation and propaganda that has been launched with a view to mobilising people against the national government and for improvement in their own lives, for the self-activity of the working class and their families, in other words. And such was the scale of that demonstration that we approached the bus drivers prior to it and said, look, we want you to be exempt from the strike in order to bus people into the demonstration in the city centre. And the point blank refused, not from a hostile viewpoint, but because they wanted to be part of the strike, which was a disadvantage when it came to the demonstration. And I met women who had pushed buggies from places like Speak, which is probably at least 4 or 5 miles from the city centre, minimum, maybe more even, and they'd come there for the demonstration despite the lack of public transport. That was a sign of the depths of support that had been built through massive, repeated argument and agitation and explanation in written form, through broadsheets, leaflets, public meetings, street corner meetings, workplace meetings, college meetings, and all the rest of it. Now, there's a complicated story around that budget that I won't go into, where no budget was set on the day because of 6 or 7 scabs in the Labour group voting against the leadership and the majority. But the upshot was that we were still in defiance of the national government, still demanding the money for the reforms, had begun the house building programme, frozen the rents, and all the other measures I've just mentioned to you. And the result was that when it came to the May elections, the people of Liverpool cast their vote in favour of what the council was doing, and a vastly increased vote for Labour. For example, I think it was from 51 Labour councillors to 58, and if I'm not mistaken, it went from something like 70,000 votes to 90,000. We'll have to double check that figure from notes, but I think it was something like that in the council elections. And that was another pressure on the Tories. And they're already facing a big pressure, because as well as fighting on the front of Liverpool, by then in March of that year, the miners had come out on strike. And as Teddy Taylor, a Scottish Tory MP, admitted in a television studio, they didn't want to fight on two fronts. They were terrified of the prospect of taking on the Miners and Liverpool Socialist Council simultaneously. And therefore, Patrick Jenkin, the Environment Minister for the Tories, was forced to come and visit Liverpool. We organised appropriate reception parties for him on the streets. And he was, whether he was genuinely horrified by the conditions he encountered is hard to know, obviously, with a Tory. But he expressed it that way, about the shocking conditions that people lived in. And he got that message not just by looking at the housing, but by people coming out of their homes to bombard him with demands for money for the City Council to improve their conditions. And the result was that negotiations took place with the Tories between the council leadership and the Tory government. And unlike sometimes, or frequently in fact, when it comes to negotiations, our motto was no secret deals, no secret diplomacy. It absolutely infuriated the Tory government, because every time that the councillors' leadership went down to negotiate in London, by the time they got to Euston Station, there would be a press conference where the council leadership would spell out what had been happening in order to keep the people of Liverpool informed and not to have any secret behind-the-scenes deals. And the upshot was, by quite a scary series of weeks of struggle, of stalemate, where the Tories appeared to be letting us stew in our own juice and isolating the city, where nobody knew what the outcome was going to be. We kept our nerve despite that, and had the attitude, we have to keep going. There's no turning back now. We have to keep going and hope that it eventually forces the Tories into retreat. Obviously, there was a lot of analysis and discussion took place behind that kind of conclusion. But on that basis, in the early days of July 84, the Tories came to a deal with the city that involved a 95% victory for the socialist-led council. Because, to put it in shorthand, they conceded in various disguises about £60 million worth of grants and concessions to the council. The only concession the council gave was to increase the rates not by 9% inflation, but 17%. But that, still to keep it in proportion, only meant about 45 pence of an increase for most people a week. And 70% of them were on state benefits where they got a rebate anyway. And therefore, that's why I think it was quite accurate the way we described it, as a 95% victory for the Socialist Council. And it paid for giant reforms to be carried out. Because over the period of 83 to 87, for example, this is just examples, we increased the number of workers in education, teachers and other staff, by just over 500. Just over 500 extra social service staff were employed. 1,000 workers' jobs were saved from redundancy. That was one of the first acts, actually, to reverse that decision. So 2,000 council jobs were created. Then there was a massive house building programme, which involved 5,000 new council houses, where there was quite a big degree of tenant participation in the design and in their preferences, and it won awards for the nature of the design. There was massive house improvement on top of that took place. And the same Tory government, by the way, that sent the councillors to the bankruptcy courts for defying them, awarded them the National Home Improvement Award in that same period. Such was the level of house improvement carried out. They didn't see the irony and the contrast. On top of the house building, 6 new sports centres were built and opened. Those 6 new nursery nursery buildings opened up as part of a massive expansion of nursery provision in the city. There was a £100 minimum wage for the council workforce, which doesn't mean much nowadays, but it actually increased the wages of 4,000 out of the 31,000 on the council staff. And there was the first public park built since Victorian times, tragically called Everton Park. It should be called Liverpool Park, obviously, because of the district it's in. But the measures such as that, and the fact that we froze the price of meals on wheels, froze the price of school meals, no rent increases for 8 years, from 82 to 90, no rent increase whatsoever in that period. All of those measures, plus the building programme, meant 16,500 building workers' jobs created in the period 83 to 87. or through the council's actions. It was a massive growth of conditions for working class people. And it was a case where socialism, in the form of bricks, mortar and daily services, services for the elderly, for children, for the disabled, services for ethnic minorities in the city, where mother tongue education was introduced for the first time, for example, in the city, where corporal punishment, by the way, was abolished at least 2 years before anywhere else in the country. Things like that, in the forms of brick, mortar, jobs, money, services of all sorts. That was the real language of socialism in action under the leadership of the socialists in Liverpool at that time. And it led to euphoria in the city when that victory was scored in June, July of 1984. Massive politicisation, a big growth in the membership of Militant included in that period. We had recruitment meetings, group recruitment meetings, where I started shouting non-members only allowed in the building because we didn't have room for both. Genuinely that was the case. And that represented the high point of victory in the struggle. But what we warned at the time quite consistently and unashamedly is that victory, so long as you've got a capitalist system in operation and then more specifically a Tory government in office nationally, especially when you're talking about a struggle in one city, victory will be temporary and you'll have to rebuild that victory in the future. And to cut the rest of the story a bit shorter, in 1984-85 we sought a united front with other Labour councils up and down Britain that were allegedly on the left, which included in London and included David Blunkett's led Sheffield and other places like that. They had a policy of not setting a rate. We disagreed with that policy because we thought it was limp by comparison with saying there's a rate freeze, for example, there's the money we need for reforms, let's join a fight to get it off the national government that's stolen billions of councils across the country. However, in the interest of a united front, we went along with the majority of the left councils. I think it was 19 of them agreed to a common approach across Britain. But after all their big promises, didn't surprise most of us, by the way, rapidly, one after the other, collapsed. They gave in the face of a few Tory threats. And we were left in a position where, apart from Lambeth, Liverpool was the only council that was still in defiance of the Tory government. And 1985 saw us reach a crisis point in the council's finances, primarily because the government removed the permission to borrow on what through what's called the Public Works Loans Board, which is an operation that allows for special cheap interest rate lending on the money markets for the likes of local authorities. Local authorities for centuries have relied on day-to-day borrowing and spending, so there's nothing new about that. Contrary to the myths that have been constructed since to try and do down the record of Liverpool, where they said it was just a case where we borrowed our way into a few gestures, the fact is that councils have always borrowed for at least 200 or 300 years. But the cheap form of borrowing was cut off from Liverpool by the Tory government through their powers over the Public Works Loans Board. And the Tories' refusal to budge in 85 was given a further green light by Neil Kinnock, which culminated in his grotesque chaos speech of October the 1st, one of my many birthdays, in 1985, which is why I remember it, at the Labour Party conference. And that denunciation of socialists, members of his own party at that point, was of course a signal to the ruling class and the Tories specifically to dig in and refuse to give any concessions. And we were facing a position where at some stage, and it's impossible to be very exact in local government finance, the way it moves in and out all the time, at some stage in a matter of weeks, the council would be bankrupt. And it wouldn't be unique in that respect, because at that same period, there was the likes of Liège Council in Belgium that went bankrupt. And so we were facing that prospect where technically, on paper, the council would be bankrupt, unable to carry out its duties, unable to sustain its workforce, unable to carry out its services, unable to bury the dead, amongst other things. And therefore we faced the choice of trying to still wring money out of the government or recognise that it was necessary to face a bankruptcy with mass layoffs of the workforce. in that context, the main thing we fought for was for an indefinite strike of the council workforce. And again, to cut the story short, in a ballot for that, by a tiny, tiny slim majority, a matter of, I think it was 1,000 or so of a difference, then the majority voted against an indefinite strike, partly because of the role of some people who claimed to be left-wingers in some of the unions, including in Unison, or what was Nalgo then, rather, and in NUPE as well, who didn't even claim to be left-wingers, open right-wingers, and in the NUT, including people that claimed to be communist at the time. They played a disgusting role, those individuals and forces in the unions, the right and the sort of fake left that existed in some cases. And they confused their own members into slimly voting against an indefinite strike. The results of that came out on the 24th of September 84. But on the 25th of September, a demonstration of about 50,000 in September 85 marched in support of the council, which showed the residue of support that although the workers hadn't been prepared to go on an indefinite strike to try and get the money off the government, to bring it to a head. So that's why we calculated that tactic, to bring it to a head in front of the government. And the government and the money markets were in their own state of chaos. They were very nervous, to put it mildly, but a major city, I think it's the fifth city of Britain, going into a bankruptcy situation or an indefinite strike. And therefore, it wasn't cut and dried in advance what would happen, but the workers who were unsure about going on indefinite strike were very sure about their support for the council's battle for the extra funding to save the jobs, the services and the rest of it. And meantime, negotiations have been going on, approaches have been going on from overseas bankers from the likes of Switzerland from August. And by, I think it was October, that began to kick in. An agreement was reached in November 85, which involves partial concessions and retreats. But the bottom line was, not a single job was lost. Not a single redundancy was made. No rent rises, like I said, for 80 years in total. No rate rises above inflation. And it was other measures, things called capitalisation of funding in local government and stuff like that, that was carried out, which slowed down the rate of reform slightly, but not a single job or service was lost in fundamentals compared to the promises that we've made. So although it was a bit of a setback, it wasn't some sort of horrendous defeat, nevertheless. But it was carried out and implemented particularly because of the influence of Kinnock isolating Liverpool. Now the Labour Party right wing feared an example of socialists in action and socialists in leadership. So they moved in December of that year, December 85, to smash the Liverpool Labour Party and smash Militant. They closed down the Labour Party, I mean literally, in the city, closed it down and launched their bogus investigation into its affairs. And it was bogus because, for example, there was officers of the Liverpool District Labour Party who were never even questioned during the investigation. And then there was people like me. I was the organiser of Militant on Merseyside. But for a part of the time, I lived outside the city in Birkenhead for a part of the period of struggle. Not at the height of it, but that I wasn't an officer of the Liverpool District Labour Party because the role I played was different. I was organising that Marxist wing within it. Nevertheless, I was quizzed up and down. So it was a bogus investigation designed to try and attack the socialist leadership in Liverpool rather than anything else. Eventually, after months of investigation, months of interrogation, months of intimidation as well that they conducted, reducing quite long in the tooth campaigners to tears on many occasions, abuse of women in the process of it actually. Then after that, they eventually managed to expel 9 of us from the Labour Party in June, July, and August of 1986.